We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
You're in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Fantasy football going to be going on out at Arrowhead Stadium. Tomorrow night, what a setup. From 5 to 9, they're offering fantasy football fans a chance to draft their squad at the Arrowhead Stadium, right there in the suite level, with the great amenities, the creature comfort inside at Arrowhead Stadium. They'll have the game on, so you'll have the Chiefs and Falcons as the backdrop, so you won't miss anything from there. And the suites are available for groups of 8 or more and come with access to a buffet meal, case of beer, so that covers Rob, unlimited soft drinks, and water. Each suite will also have an official photo taken. It is also equipped with Wi-Fi, the wireless internet, which is quite good, by the way, on that level. As a matter of fact, all guests must be 21 years of age or older. Individual tickets are $80. More details and registration information is available at www.chiefsfantasydraft.com. We have registered many winners. It is time to find out who our winner is, who's going to get their suite for free. Is that correct?
I believe the winner's already been notified. His name was Drew. We emailed him. We got the email address. Drew is our winner.
Drew.
Does Drew have a last name?
Sure. We don't usually get last names on the air, but okay. Drew Joyner is our winner.
All right, Drew. Well done. You're a winner. And, see, this is the kind of thing you got to understand. When you register to win something here at Sports Radio 810 WHB, there might be even more prizes. Everyone who registered but didn't win is going to get a day that they get to wash Curtis Siebold's car.
Awesome.
That's right. You get a chance to wash Siebold's car. You'll be notified.
Hand wash, obviously.
Of your day. No, that's not actually what they're getting. I'm being told now. No, I've got that wrong. Yeah. They're getting a pair of tickets to the Super Bowl
for life.
No, that's
life.
Not right either. That's not right either.
Super Bowl for life.
That's not right either. What are they getting?
They're getting a pair of tickets to the Chiefs preseason finale at Arrowhead Stadium when they take on the Green Bay Packers.
Okay, very good. Chiefs-Packers tickets.
Go Pack, go.
Everybody gets a pair of tickets that registered but did not win. So congrats on that front. And maybe in the future you should just take it when I don't know what they get. Maybe why don't you just
I really
it?
Enjoyed the guessing game. Not going to lie to you.
The car wash, washing Siebold's car to Super Bowl. I mean, this fell right in between, literally right in the middle. Let's talk Chiefs football. Nate Taylor from The Athletic is with us here in the program. My subscription to The Athletic, where I click on my teams, where you see, by the way, on your subscription, what do you have for my teams? I want to know if, like, you two, do you have Kansas on your teams?
Yes.
I have literally only my teams.
Do you have Missouri?
No. I don't have. I do have the Cavs on my teams, and I have Chelsea FC on my teams.
Yeah. You're such a clown. My teams, this is the order of the site lists them. Chiefs, Jayhawks, Wildcats, Lakers, Tigers, Royals, Sharks, Sporting Kansas City, and freaking last, Syracuse. Like, I'm fine if you want to go alphabetical, but why do we use Syracuse and not Orange when we use Kansas, but then we use Lakers and Royals? Why? Can I tell me, Nate? Who's in charge of this?
First off, thanks for promoting the capabilities to have the app do what you want for
yes.
you.
So it's my sports page every day, basically.
As an on-demand entity. I don't know. You know, that's a preference choice, I would imagine. You know, you want to send that up the chain? Would you like me to refer to Syracuse as the Orangeman?
Yeah, or just Orange,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I probably can move them around, but I'm just too stupid.
I would assume you'd have to like clear them all out, and then like maybe you would, you know, if you click them first and re-clicked it, you know, I mean, we're getting real technical now, but that's a possible solution to
all
your
right.
problem.
All right, I'd rather just bitch and have somebody else fix it for
well
me.
You know, it's
the American way today.
It is what it is, you
it's
know?
How we do things now.
Hey, but as long as you keep engaging with the app, I'll be a happy man.
Ask not what I can do for my country. Ask what my country can do for me. Mm-hmm. It is the new motto of America. And by the way, it's not the motto of millennials, you lazy, fat, middle-aged turds. Stop blaming everything on the millennials. Come on. Just Rob's a moron. The rest of them, pretty good kids.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm pretty responsible.
Are you a millennial?
Yes, I'm on the back end of it, you know. So
what is the millennial age from what
I think,
to what?
I think I've read in like, I mean, it depends on the publication, but most people would say if you're under 35, that you're considered a millennial. Excuse me, anywhere between like 22, you know, right out of college to like, you know, where kind of I am right now. Once you start having a family, then you kind of fade out of that sort of category. But I'm like the very end of my millennial. Okay. Life stage, I guess. Okay. You could say.
I'm seeing there are no precise dates, but most demographers and researchers typically use the early 80s as a starting birth years and the mid 90s to early 2000s as ending birth years.
Kind of just what he said, right?
Yeah. I just want to put some numbers on it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I've read that, like, if you're 36, that's really towards the end. Like,
you're not.
I mean, don't say that word out of your mouth.
No, don't even.
You're a generation.
Or don't describe yourself as such, I should say. Yeah.
Let's start with the Chiefs with what did we learn from camp? There used to be a PR guy for the Kansas City Chiefs who I was a fan of, who would come up and say, so what has WHB learned today? What have they learned today? So in honor of the great Bob Moore, I ask you, what did we learn from training camp? Did we learn anything from our time at camp in the first preseason game?
I think what we learned just from a standpoint of watching every practice, and I did watch every practice, is they are probably going to throw the ball more than even some may expect coming out of the gate. And, you know, that could obviously help save Kareem Hunt's body going into year two. But I really think Andy Reid just is going to be aggressive in terms of passing the football. I mean, you kind of saw that in the preseason opener. I was shocked that they tried to attempt eight passes out of the nine plays from the first team starters on offense. I think they're going to pass the ball more, and maybe, just maybe, it's a morsel, but maybe they'll be tougher in terms of stopping the run. Now, we've talked before about
that's
like
funny.
How does that equate to like actual success, or like if that's going to actually measure out towards the end of the year. But if you have younger guys who are more willing to, you know, stop the run, then you should be better. Like, maybe? I don't know. But I think they're going to pass the ball more and try to be tougher in terms of tackling. I will say this, like, it's not the regular season. We've only seen, you know, one game. And this, you know, I'll watch this tomorrow in Atlanta. But are they a better short tackling team? And I think that's two things you can kind of expect. That, hey, they're going to give Patrick every opportunity to pass the ball to all these, you know, skillful players, and then, you know, tackling means you're going to hopefully be better at stopping the run.
Okay, riddle me this, Batman. What was the Chiefs' defense ranked last year yardage-wise? Do you know?
Like total yards?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good question. Because I'm assuming it's pretty low.
Yo, yeah, 28.
Yeah, I was going to say, my guess was going to be 27, but I think that may be yards per run attempt or something like that.
Okay, 28. What were they... What would you guess they were against the run, and what were they against the pass in becoming the 28th best defense in the NFL?
In the pass, they were what, 29, 30?
You nailed it, 29 against the pass.
Right.
And run?
And it's around 25, 26?
25.
Yeah, yeah.
So are we, like, is this run, this fascination with 18. Stopping the run?
Just be 18. No, that's the cap.
But is the fascination with stopping the run, are we way... Like, they just sucked all around.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like we act like we stopped that run.
But can you do one thing? You know, like, can they just do one thing competently?
So what Whether about that's, this?
Because I have faith in, like, Kendall Fuller, but that doesn't mean that that's going to translate to them being some great pass defending team. So my belief is they'll be better against the run than against the pass.
I think they get two spots better against the run just off Kendall Fuller. Maybe five. Like when Marcus Peters wouldn't tackle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So let's look at it here. Let's play a little game of how many yards they needed to be better to move up the rush yard rankings. So 118.1 rush yards allowed per game, they were 25th. 24th was 117.9.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say this. Let's say there were two times that he could have brought people down for 5 yards.
Instead of 14.
Right?
Right.
So that's 10 yards every game?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if they, instead of just going through every team and boring you, if they got 10 yards better per game, they move all the way up to tied for 11th with Chicago at 108.1. If Kendall Fuller makes two tackles, mm-hmm. and I know there's one Bronco play that I tweeted out that he gave up an additional like 15 yards on, just that one play alone. If during the course of the game there were 10 yards that he gave up, they go all the way to number 11 and we're not talking about it. So my point is this, and whether it's Fuller and a healthy Eric Berry and a healthy Alan Bailey and maybe just a little bit different scheme and then Anthony Hitchens in the middle and Ragland being healthier, although he's already got a sore knee and Hitchens is already missing time.
Mm-hmm.
All these different things. If we can just say, hey, they're going to be 10 yards per game better and they come in at number 11, if they get 10.1 yards per game better and they get to 108 yards per game, they'd have to go to 105.8, excuse me. They get 13 yards better, they get to 10th. But at 11, they're almost top 10.
Right.
And everybody looks at this defense entirely differently. So my point is this. Have we been completely wasting our time talking about the run? And maybe even the Chiefs, when you talk about the resources of Hitchens going for Ragland last year.
Who fully understands the defense now versus a year ago.
Right. And we'll see. Maybe Hitchens is going to make a huge difference. But, you know, he's going to have the green dot, and he didn't stay on the field for pass downs. So we're going to see what happens. Have they maybe gone about this all wrong? That in reality what they should have been doing was working a lot more on their pass defense? That part of the problem was that anytime they did get the team in long down and distance, they were constantly giving up move the chains plays. And you know, I'm asking the question.
Yeah.
I'm not loading up and saying, stop crying about the run.
Right.
And the run defense is irrelevant. It's their pass defense that was coming. But is it possible that we're looking at this backwards? Everybody else seems to think if they fix the run, then the pass defense will get better with it. Is it entirely the opposite? That maybe they needed to be more pass rush oriented, more coverage oriented, and maybe Josh Jackson at Iowa, which to me is the guy we're going to compare mm-hmm. to Breland Speaks, because he was a quality corner that was available that they didn't take.
Yep.
Who
you and I love.
Yes, we're big fans of who I'm pretty sure Kevin Harlan proposed to after the first Packer game, because I listened to that game, and oh my goodness, our boy Kevin Harlan was loving him some Josh Jackson. Is it possible that they did do this entirely wrong, and they're going to really be regretting the approach they took?
It's a valid point. It's a really valid point. And, you know, I think it's slightly easier for just their roster where it is right now to be better in the run. But it's always that good question of, what do you react more to? Do you react more to the regular season, or do you react to playoff failure? And I think from an organizational standpoint, they looked at that loss to Tennessee, and it I don't think it shell-shocked them, but it obviously had its effect. And you get a guy like Xavier Williams, you have Hitchens, you have Ragland, Alan Bailey is supposed to be back and full healthy, Chris Jones, potential breakout year. All those things sort of lead me to believe that it's just easier for them from a roster standpoint to tackle the run right now versus multiple years of getting guys who are closer to maybe Kendall Fuller than maybe David Emerson, who you just have to, you know, we just have to give him a contract and see if he can prove it this year. I think from a theoretical, philosophical perspective, yes, your question is very valid, because the league's about passing. We know this. Like, teams are going to air it out. There's been, you know, if you look in the NFL culture right now in terms of what is being written after the first week of preseason football, everybody's talking about, like, yo, they're going to pass the ball a lot this year. Like, the rules sort of give you so many advantages. There are so many skilled players. Even if guys like Odell Beckham are holding out for contracts, you know they're going to be around by week two, week three, like, doing their thing and probably burning a lot of corners. So it's just harder from a philosophical standpoint to see who has a good pass defense. You would probably say the last one was the, you know, Legion of Boom in Seattle, and look where all those guys are. Like, all those guys are
Jacksonville's got an incredible pass defense.
Jacksonville's got, but I kind of want to see it another year. You know, I kind of want to see it another year where Seattle was just so dominant and really forced you to, you know, just do things you weren't really hoping or wanting to do. I think that it's going to take time for the Chiefs to get to that standpoint versus now where it's like, can you just tackle somebody? Like you mentioned, like, can you just, if he's in the open field, can you slow him down or, like, give the pursuit a chance or just do it yourself? They have a better chance of doing that versus being, you know, average to above average in pass coverage. And I don't even want to talk about pass rush because I don't believe it until I see it. Honestly, right, I don't believe it.
And I don't see the guy. I mean, I guess that Breland Speaks is new, and Tano Passanio year two at a new position at a higher level. Those are the two guys you'd point to being better. But D Ford is D Ford. Period. End of discussion. There's no breakout.
You're like weighing me down.
D Ford takes a step. I'm like,
I know.
When he's 40,
it'll make one.
Look. When I came into camp, I was really high on D. I'm like, this is gonna be the year. D's fully healthy. Like, talk to people around the league and closely involved with him. And they're like, he's healthy. Like, just see if he's healthy. But I mean, unless he shows something again, tomorrow against Atlanta or Chicago, it's just like, I don't know, man. I'm starting to be more like you in the D Ford side, and that doesn't make me feel good.
You down.
That doesn't make me feel great.
No,
but I can't. It's hard for me to push back until we see it on the field.
No, and hopefully we will see some moments against the Falcons, and who figure to play their first unit, which is a very good first unit, more in this game. So they're going to get an opportunity to show something against a good team. Eric Berry.
Yeah.
When does it start to become Andy Reid's going to get real tired of answering these questions?
I think he already is. And who's to say? I mean, the Chicago Bears game, that's the big one, because I don't think he's playing tomorrow. I've got no indication that he's playing tomorrow. He may not travel with the team today was kind of what I was told, that the team was kind of discussing whether he would stay back.
He's not going to play. Why would you bother?
Right. Well, it's Georgia. It's Atlanta. I mean, he's got a lot of family. But, again, if you're not going to play and if you really want to take this heel situation seriously, I'm sure the medical staff would sort of try to convince him to stay back. But I'm not sure he's getting on the plane today. He's not playing, all indications are. So, we're going to watch. I think they come back Tuesday practice, and you'll see a lot of the install for Wednesday, as if you were going to prepare for a regular season game, because the third preseason game is a true dress rehearsal. Those are the two key days, because he's gonna get 4 or 5 days of rest if he doesn't get on the plane, if he just stays here and gets ready. But obviously there's some concern to be had, and it's not like he's getting younger. It's not like, and I think I heard you guys a few days ago talk about coming out of chemo and treatment and what that does to your body.
Well, that's how I want to let you be part of it. Who thinks, because you were on the phone, who thinks Eric Berry is going to blow out his other Achilles before his career is over?
I mean, I want to give Eric Berry such benefit of the doubt, because he's, arguably superhuman what he's done, and it should always be acknowledged. But we saw Derek Johnson do it. You're not getting younger. You're getting older, and you're playing a position where the defense and the offense demand you do everything. So as I filibuster here, yes, my arm is
put it up.
Arm is raising. Can I be your hope? Your optimistic.
Of course, hope. That's the thing. Is like this is the thing. So many people out there get all pissed. You put your arm up or down in your car right now.
It's up,
and you decide whether it's up or down.
It's up.
But don't you sit there and bitch because I deal with the topics that we really need to deal with.
It's up.
It's up.
Let's
pummel this guy. Because Curtis is the only one who's not up.
Because he's superhuman?
There's one possible reason.
No, he's incompetent.
his right heel is hurting.
Yes.
His right heel hurt last year in camp. The left heel was the one that he blew out.
Right. The Achilles,
The two injuries.
Because he was favoring the one that's about to go.
Could be.
And so he blew the strong one.
And so
the weak one is only a time.
Did he blow the left one again?
I think about this.
Now he blows the right one.
This time?
The left one, as I've heard, like when they redo it, you end up actually being stronger.
Perhaps.
But
it depends on your body. Yeah, but perhaps.
But, I think the added layer that, because we heard it all when he was hurt about how the chemotherapy does affect joints and ligaments and tendons. And a year later, he blows it out. I mean,
which is why
how much medical, I'm sorry, medicine has spoken.
I will say this, he's taking mental reps. Like, it's a legit thing. Like, he's not doing a ton at camp, and you could say, well, he doesn't need to because he's a 9 to 10 year veteran, and sure, and he's great. But think about—I
do agree with that, because he held out all of camp and came back and had a great season,
right? And so
I don't care if he plays,
right?
If he's the preseason,
but it's all to get him as ready as possible for September 9th. And think about last year, and I keep going back to this: the safety position in Bob Sutton's defense, based on what offenses are going to demand, is probably one of the hardest position, if not the hardest position on the defense, if you're not a pass rusher.
They are what, 16-4? 16-4 when he plays and Justin Houston doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
They are 15-10 when Houston plays and Barry doesn't, just for a way to gauge between the two of
right.
them. That's too small a sample size to draw a definitive conclusion, but those numbers lead you down the road of Barry's more important than
yes,
Houston.
Yes, and the position is more important, I could argue, because there's going to be so much demanding on him. And in that you know regular season opener against New England, he covered Rob Gronkowski. I mean, who's covered him outside of Cam Chancellor or Earl Thomas, who's done something comparable? And he plays so hard and he's so effective, and there's so much demand on what
wow,
opposing
he is
offices
tremendous
will put
against the run too.
Right,
run
right. Support. But I'm just saying in terms of where did the injury occur? The injury occurred in pass coverage because you got to be so technically sound. Your foot will have to be right. You have to
make an explosive stop and
yes,
start.
Yes, yes. These are the things that lead me to raise my hand because you know he's not going to go not full speed. You know he's going to be so technically sound, and that's a lot of demanding position on the body because Bob Sutton, that's truly his joker in the deck. Is like I can put Barry anywhere, he will cover anything, he will explode plays, he will disrupt timing, and there's only so much one man's body can take, and that's why I'm led to believe that like 16 games this season and the playoffs, it's a lot to ask. Even though he's the highest paid safety in the league, rightly so, I don't know if he can do that. I just don't.
Is that we talked about what the fundamental flaw is. Let's take a break, and when we come back, let's talk about whether or not they have a problem with their cap management.
Oh, John. Oh, John.
It started with him.
Oh, John.
Right? It started with him. Rob was looking up an interesting story that's out there. I can't remember where it was. We'll talk about it next, though, about they put together the ultimate roster and how many Chiefs made the ESPN did. It made the ultimate roster. How many Chiefs made the ultimate roster? We'll do that next here in the program.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. This NFL rushing champion scored a touchdown on his final NFL carry in 1992. Who is he? NFL rushing champ.
NFL rushing champ.
92, career ended, scored a touchdown on his final NFL carry.
Barry Foster was a rushing champ about those days. From the Steelers,
92.
Would that be a possibility?
Mm-hmm. He won the rushing championship in 92. But
Foster
that
did?
Was not, yeah, but that was not his final season.
So would have won it in the late 80s?
Mm-hmm.
Hall of Famer?
Nope.
Oh.
Christian Okoye. Wow.
Look at you.
By
was,
quite.
Wow.
Christian Okoye, 1480. Somebody look it up, see if I nailed this one. 1480
right.
To Barry Sanders, 1470 mm-hmm. in 1989 to win his rushing title. Am I correct?
Yes. Quite by coincidence, they're playing the Broncos. Broncos scored, tried an onside kick, which Keith Cash scooped up and almost scored on.
Yep.
Got knocked out of bounds at the 8-yard line. Okoye crashed over. And I think that set the Chiefs' record for rushing touchdowns in a career, past Abner Haynes. Did not carry the ball again. Got injured in camp the next year, and I think he tried to briefly to come back with the Vikings, but never played in the mm-hmm. NFL again.
Yeah, Christian Okoye, what a great,
awesome
what a great,
dude.
Yeah, great guy, great back, a lot of fun to watch, no doubt. Playing for Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, great barbecue. Joe'sKC.com if you want to send it anywhere in the country. 117th in Strangline, 117th in Row, 119th in Strangline. And then the original at 47th and Mission for that great, great barbecue from Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Nate Taylor from The Athletic is with us right now talking Chiefs football. What did I say I would ask you? Oh, so ESPN put out their ultimate roster.
Yep.
And it was based on building the best roster based on their real cap numbers. So, hey, got to make the $177 million cap. They pick guys. There was a window of years to be drafted, right? 12 and later, I think it was. 12 to 14 or 14 to 18 or something. Rob's looking it up to double-check it. Anyway, point being, anybody in the NFL.
Right.
Could have anybody in the NFL to build the best roster. To give you an example, Carson Wentz was the starting quarterback. Dak Prescott was the backup quarterback. Right, Carson Wentz, number two overall pick, is like $6 or $7 million. But then Dak Prescott is, probably million ish, maybe
right,
not even,
right,
not even,
not even
he was
that.
Like a
right.
fourth round pick. So putting together the ultimate roster based upon being able to fit it all under $177 million cap, how many Kansas City Chiefs made the roster?
Not that many.
Uno.
Not that many.
But I have the rules here. Our team starts with 32 picks from the 2015, 16, 17, 18 drafts, one player from each round, plus at least one undrafted free agent must make the roster.
All right, so each round, so you couldn't just load up on all and six. Mm-hmm. So you had to take some first-round guys and stuff like that, and that's how they did it, which I think is really cool and how they put it together. So the one guy, Harrison Butker. They had to have one from each team.
Yes.
So Harrison Butker is the one guy that made it for the Chiefs. Now, why do I bring this up? I spent a lot of time during his John Dorsey's time here. Well, I will continue to really like John Dorsey, the guy. And I think he is a tremendous football scout and a qualified, competent general manager. No GM is any good if their coach sucks.
What I could have, should have, would have, who knows?
I do.
Hey, buddy boy.
Chewing on that gum hard.
Yeah. Well, now you get to see, I've talked about it, like everyone thought he was like Goody Two-Shoes. On Hard Knocks, you're seeing him swear.
Uh-huh.
Like you get him one-on-one and you talk to him one-on-one off the record, he would swear.
Uh-huh.
And so that was always interesting. But not a lot. He wasn't a drunken sailor or anything, but, you drop it in there. Now you see it on Hard Knocks with the Browns. But I think, I always felt like he was making some cap mistakes. And I think Andy Reid covered up those cap mistakes. And the three biggest are re-signing Tamba Haley and botching the end of his contract and then waiting to extend Houston and Eric Berry and going through the transition tag situation. Well, those were big mistakes, but I think we're finding out there are even more mistakes. That basically says that there was no round and no position where the Chiefs had the best bargain in the NFL. It was their undrafted, poached from another practice squad kicker. Well, you know what that is? That's Mark Redman as an all-star. That's Ken Harvey as an all-star. That is, we had to have one. So let's take
who makes little to no money.
Right. Mm-hmm. But in their defense, by the way, that's a Brett Veach guy too.
Yes, of course.
And Butker is actually really good.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah. But
he's legit. So
he fits the category.
He's more like Sweeney when he was the only guy, mm-hmm. from a cap situation. That says to me a little bit more how much Andy Reid perhaps has overcome the personnel. That I don't know that Andy Reid rode John Dorsey out of this town on hot rails,
mm-hmm.
but he sure as hell didn't stand in front of the train that was taking him out of town, right? Because if he had said, no, this is my GM, he's not going anywhere, I think he'd still be here. Because I think Clark Hunt knows the most valuable asset this franchise has at this moment is Andy Reid. Mm-hmm. 2 years from now, it might be Patrick Mahomes. But right now, it's Andy Reid.
Right.
But I think this does speak to the fact that this is more of an understanding of why John Dorsey's not the GM here anymore.
Yeah, and the Justin Houston deal had some complications around it just because, like you said, they waited. And then Eric Berry, I don't know why they waited on him. I mean, and this is, sort of revisionist, history. But once you find guys that are elite, what most GMs are doing now is either – you're waiting to the very end where you know they're going to leave, a la my guy in Pittsburgh, Le'Veon Bell.
Le'Veon Bell,
Le'Veon Bell. You get as much out of him as you can because unfortunately.
There's no such thing as a bad one-year contract. So.
Yeah, technically, yes. But most GMs now are of the case or of the mindset of like, well, we don't want to get to Odell Beckham territory because that's when the rifts start to occur. And once you understand someone is as valuable as these elite guys are, it's better to shore them up, perhaps on shorter term deals, but at least you lock them in before it gets to like so bad where it gets backloaded to where we are now with Justin Houston and Eric Berry is going to make quite a decent amount of money coming towards the end of his deal that it complicates things and it cap holds you to where now you have to rely so much not only on them to stay relevant and stay very good, but now you got to hit every young guy possible through the draft. And, the draft is important for a lot of reasons, but once your cap situation is where the Chiefs are, you can take some risk, but you can't take a lot of risk without truly thinking you're getting the value that you hope you're going to get. So Brett Veach came into a situation that was kind of murky is the word I would describe it, where it's like, okay, there is some talent here. But you got to get better, and the avenues and mechanisms to do that are a little tough because John Dorsey, I could say, gave out money or waited too late to give out money. But, you know, recognize that it's better to have these people than not to have them.
Is there somebody they really blew it on by letting go of? Like, is there someone they had that then ended up being just a stud somewhere else that they walked on? Because that's
David Irving.
No one really comes to
David
mind.
David Irving. Character questions, and those character questions have continued down in Dallas. Signed him out of Iowa State with you know, he was a second, third round talent, defensive end, and he's gone down to Dallas and played well, but he's had problems down there. So yeah, that's probably a decent example. Is there anybody else that was a Chief that's gone? I mean, because Asamoah was left, he's out of football. Jeff Allen's down in Houston, but nobody's raving about Jeff Allen playing incredible ball.
Rodney Hudson.
He's probably up there.
He's up there. They tried to sign him. The Raiders had so much cap room, they put a massive number on the first year to poison pill it. So, yes, I'll give you that because he inherited cap room and blew it up in 1 year because it was only like 1 or 2 years in. And Hudson's been in Oakland for how long?
Let's see.
It's two or three.
Because it was right away. I mean, he had a great cap situation that he inherited from Scott Pioli. That's about all he inherited. That, Justin Houston, Eric Berry, and Dustin Colquitt, Derek Johnson, and Jamal Charles.
4 years in KC, three in Oakland.
Yeah.
So he's been there for 3 years. So he was 2 years in.
Yeah.
When he made that move. And so 2 years in, he'd already blown up his cap to where he couldn't match that. So, yeah, I'd say that's fair on Rodney Hudson.
I would say he's up there. Yeah.
And he'd turn around and draft Mitch Morse to replace him. Which, you know, to this point, we all like Mitch Morse when he plays and he's healthy. He's really good.
It's kind of a wash.
He was considered – I'd take Hudson because Hudson plays.
It's kind of a wash. The potential – I mean, I hate – the upside leans more in the Chiefs' favor. But, yeah, he's got to play this year.
He's got to play. Yeah. He hadn't played enough. And I love
Hudson's
Mitch Morse
going
guy,
for his third consecutive Pro Bowl.
Hudson – but that's where the Raiders had the better cap situation, and he holds it. So yes, absolutely, he screwed the pooch there. Any others? I can't think of any. I don't think of any wideouts. You know, Dexter McCluster didn't do a whole lot anywhere else. Brandon Flowers didn't do a lot anywhere else. I don't even remember when.
Brandon Flowers was serviceable, but not like Pro Bowl.
He had 1 year where he was pretty good with the Chargers, and then Brandon Carr with the Cowboys. Was that him or was that under Pioli?
That could have been Pioli.
I can't even remember. Sean Smith has been, you know, is now out of jail.
Yeah.
The penitentiary. That was the other thing. He was in a penitentiary. Not county.
Yeah. Pen.
Not county.
The.
Now, I will point out that.
Sean McGrath.
John Dorsey is the guy who brought him.
Don't look at me like that.
John Dorsey is the guy who brought Sean Smith to town. Remember that big free agent sign? He was part of blowing up the cap. Mm-hmm. We were all excited because Sean Smith was in town. Ah.
What do you think? Because Dorsey was the one that gave Laurent Duvernay-Tardif the money, right?
Yes.
What do you think of that? Now, he's got a concussion right now, but beside the point.
Player. He grades as an above-average guard, according to Pro Football Focus. I think he's good. You know, you guys on,
we love him, by the way. We as reporters love him.
Oh, because he's
he's so intelligent.
Yeah, he's a bright guy and has something to say.
Uh-huh.
But that's
where – if you ask me about John Dorsey deals, that's the one that kind of swings the pendulum. You could argue either side, and I'd be like, okay, you know, like, did you give him a shade too much money? Perhaps, but you know, he is valuable. He is someone who's gonna be consistent.
Your boy Seth Kaiser had a great piece there that I was watching this morning. Dear readers, here is why there's no reason to panic about the Chiefs' offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
It's a couple days old. I just saw my bad.
No. read it. That's what's matter.
And he has little video clips where he basically defends the Chiefs' offensive line and says they weren't bad.
They were okay.
Right? So if we were to – he's like, he didn't say they were tremendous. He says no reason to panic. And I think that's fair. But I guess my point was on the Duvernay-Tardif contract is that – I think it's a little excessive. I was shocked at the amount, but he does grade as a good guard.
Right.
I think Andy Reid was kind of always about, you know, the tackles, and I'll change out what's in between. And so I don't know. I don't know if Andy Reid was on board with that or not, but he's got it now.
Yeah. And you give the deal thinking that he's going to continue to improve year over year. I mean, it's part of the deal I can see from Dorsey's standpoint is like, well, what else do we got? And we're not probably going to draft anybody who's got as much upside, as he does. And you could say, has he lived up to the deal or not? That's up to you. But that's why I think that's the most interesting contract Don Dorsey gave out. But because at least, you know, Laurent's going to be a starter, but is he going to live fully to the deal? That's kind of yet to be determined. But, you know, obviously it's a better deal than he gave to some other guys.
Right. Offensive line spending for the Kansas City Chiefs. Currently, right now, 2018, they rank 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14th, according to Spotrac.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, their spending was, I'm kind of transitioning over just to offensive line talk right now in general. Last year, their spending, I want to say, and it's loading as we speak, I want to say it was 13. Nope, it was 5th. So I nailed it. It was 5th, but this year it's projecting to 14th. What money did they shed? It wasn't Zach Fulton, or was there a big payday, somebody have a big bonus or something like that, that where it came in? Maybe these are actual dollars spent. But down to like 14, they kind of, you know, I hear so much talk about how much they're spending on the offensive line. I'm like,
no.
Patriots, you know, have spent quite a bit of resources in picks and in dollars on their offensive line, although now they shedded a lot of it in moving Nate Solder, and we'll see how good they are. But their Super Bowl years, their offensive line was pretty expensive when they won the championship. This line should be good. It's not as bad as people thought it was in that first game when you look at Seth Kaiser's breakdown of it. But it's damn well good enough to give Patrick Mahomes plenty of time, correct?
Yeah, and Patrick's got to
get – or better be.
Yeah, and Patrick's got to be – you know, he's got to continue to learn protection adjustments and making sure to step up in the pocket. That's something that Mike Kafka sort of explained and that I slightly included in my article about how the team just reacted to watching film of themselves in that first 9 snaps. But, everybody's got to work together. And I will say this, I have faith that Andy Reid can make it work with those guys.
Okay.
Just because he's always figured out a way to get the running backs enough space within reps. And then as long as Patrick understands the clock in your head, keeping the clock in your head, like, I know you want to make the spectacular play. I know you want to scramble every now and then and get the first down. By all means, go do that. But the thing about Alex, which made the offensive line probably a little bit better than it was last year, was he always had the clock in his head of, when does the ball need to come out? First read not here, second read not here. I need to scramble or just check it down and move on, unless it's, you know, third or fourth down. And it'll be interesting to see how Patrick's brain sort of works as each week progresses on about keeping the clock in your head so that you protect the offensive line just as much as they protect you.
Let's see, but you got time for a little bit more?
Yeah.
Because I want to ask you, you were at the
– oh, yeah, let's do it.
The Q&A after practice.
Oh, yeah.
And the anthem came up, and I've saved it for the very end because I have anthem fatigue,
and I had to write about it,
and you had to write about it, and I think also I think most people have anthem fatigue, and we both agree no one's changing their mind,
but probably not.
But I do think the fact that it came up now is of note as to what we should expect for Chiefs fans this year. We'll get Nate Taylor's thoughts about that next. He covers the Chiefs for The Athletic. Okay, here we go. A press conference, which I think was supposed to be just a quick photo op for the governor of Missouri to showcase his love of the Kansas City Chiefs. He was wearing Chiefs socks, by the way.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I saw him later.
Oh, wow.
I saw him later over at the base at the 139th Airlift Wing and where he got a tour. And, yes, I see he was wearing Chiefs socks. And so he's a Chiefs fan. And I think he was very excited to go to camp and check out camp and you know, maybe just a quick photo op with, you know, one.
Yeah. I mean, the way I describe
it. Revenue producer for the state of Missouri, theoretically,
theoretically,
would say.
Theoretically, yeah.
Some would say it's a revenue drag, but, you know, certainly a showcase piece. No one would argue that it, you know, the Chiefs and Royals and Sporting Kansas City put Kansas City's name out there more than anything else on a national scale.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up being a massive inquisition of kneeling and then went beyond into other political topics.
Mm-hmm.
Your reaction standing there watching this all, because I wasn't there. I was over at the base.
I just
was what?
I just couldn't believe it. I was just like, oh.
Couldn't believe it. How?
So he gets on this. He gets into the media tent, and there's all the cameras are ready. All the reporters are there, and he's supposed to say his opening statement. And I just assumed, you know, which again they teach you in journalism, don't assume anything. But you know, as a human being, I just assumed he's gonna voice his admiration. Is what I wrote in The Athletic. Voice his admiration for the Chiefs, the fact that they show military towards the unity towards the military,
right.
And that he was gonna walk off. And then someone asked him about kneeling, and he said, "Well, I wouldn't do it, but like I understand the players, and no player that I know has been disrespecting of the military. But then why don't you understand it totally?" So he kind of contradicted himself. Took questions that probably didn't need to be taken, and then he got whisked away.
I don't think he was briefed.
No,
like, get
not
ready
at all.
For this. Remember, what is your stance? He served in the Army.
Yes, 6 years.
And I think he's very pro-military. I mean, not mm-hmm. even just for that. I heard the man talk later in the day. But I think he does respect and understand what the people are kneeling. He was not ready to answer that question.
No, he wasn't ready, but at least he acknowledged that the players stayed on the field and took every question, photo op, you know, signature, anything that they could do for those military members, yeah. They did. And so at least he was there to see that, so that maybe he has a better perspective of players moving forward.